Welcome to episode 193 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, we read Dazzler by Tom DeFalco. And now, the cast begins.
Another grooving episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
And Jen.
Hey, Mama.
And this week, we're talking about Daniel Bryan, the WWE wrestler, also known as the Dazzler.
I must have read the wrong comic, then.
David, have you seen this guy? I was looking up Dazzler on Reddit to try and find something interesting to talk about, and I kept seeing pictures of this, like, really bird, like, do with this like huge beard hanging out in like redneck places.
And I was like, see, when I Google image search Dazzler, it's the comic book character.
Oh no, so, see, I look on Reddit, that's why it's different. The Dazzler. Just try it. It'll be a bunch of pictures of the dude with a beard. It'll be kind of, I don't know, it's different. Anyway, what we actually did was read Dazzler by Tom DeFalco from 1981. I read the first 7 issues. I think you guys probably read some in 6. Because really, these are only, you can only really read these if you get the singles or if you get the Essential Dazzler. And I don't know, I got the singles. And I read the first 6, which is what I kind of told everybody we were going to be reading, except the 6th one was like a cliffhanger, so I didn't know what's going to happen with the Hulk. I had to read the 7th one. I couldn't help myself. It was too exciting. So that's what I read. You guys might have. Did you guys stop at 6?
Stopped at 6.
Oh. Neither of you were as enthralled as I was.
Not so much. No.
I enjoyed this comic, but I just stopped. I was like, that's good enough. I'll read the rest later.
You know what I did stop doing? I stopped reading all of the text boxes, and I feel like I got the same story I would have gotten if I hadn't.
Like, you just read the dialogue?
I just read the dialogue and looked at and like the thought bubbles, but I didn't read the text boxes at all.
Well, you know, it's just like, it's that like silver bronze age comic book narration that is like, you know, it has its, so if I feel like if a writer had really like mastered the art of doing that narration, it's good, but sometimes it's just not that good, and sometimes it feels kind of what am I trying to say, like it's like unnecessary, like, oh, I have to slog through this stuff.
Yeah, I had a serious problem with reading this comic. So this is actually kind of a big deal for me, because normally if I don't read every single piece of text on a page, I go nuts. So like when we read, what was it?
V for Vendetta.
I read every letter.
Oh God.
In the background. Like that's the kind of reader I am. And it's the kind of thing that keeps me awake at night. If I don't like it's a like, compulsive reading. I read everything up through issue 4, and then by the time I got to issue 5, I was just like, I cannot read this anymore. And I looked at the pictures, and I skimmed some of the dialogue, but really didn't read it. It was mostly picture book time for me. I was really done with the writing.
I mean, it's one of those things that really, it instantly dates a comic. Just right off the bat, because that's something that's not, it's not even that it's not in style anymore, it just doesn't happen anymore, especially the extra redundancy. Like there's times where the text box would be narrating what the person was doing, and the person would be thinking about the specific way in which they were doing the thing, and then the art on the panel was them actually doing the thing. So you've got the same message given to you 3 ways.
And I feel like it's the same message over and over, too. And that's kind of why I stopped. I mean, I could have gotten by with just skipping the text box. But I feel like every issue where I read the text, it was Dazzler saying, you know, I really love singing and I don't want to give it up. My dad's a dick. Singing is hard. Being a mutant is hard. I have to fight this guy because I'm here. And, like, it was kind of 4 issues of the same thing and different villains each time and different, you know, record producers each time. So, I don't know.
Oh, man. But, okay, record producers, but that manager, I love that manager, and I didn't want a single less word of anything he said. Her manager who, like, alliterates all the fucking time.
Yeah.
I fucking loved him. He was baller as hell.
I liked, he's the one who, like, introduced Lancelot to her and was like, and this piece of man, or something like that. He said something.
This piece
like,
of man meat, I think, is what he said.
Yeah,
actually.
It was, like, totally inappropriate.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so that's how this goes.
Well, I mean, the thing is, like, yes, that nowadays that is certainly an inappropriate thing to say, but I feel like that maybe back in the early 80s that didn't necessarily mean.
Oh,
it was,
yeah.
Like, phallic term.
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. I'm not, like, bothered. I thought it was spectacular. But it just set the tone. It's like, this is an old comic.
I still think today, even if we talk about, like, man meat, I mean, if you're in, like, the innuendo sort of part of the conversation, then it means penis. But even now, like, I don't know. I think man meat today has more or less the same connotation it did back then. It's just, Lancelot was a hell of a character.
Yeah, did you see his shirts? Like, his wardrobe was spectacular.
And they all seem to have a heart on them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I like the way that, like, they tried to give him a little bit of depth, where, like, the one time he quoted poetry, and the other was like, maybe there's something more to him than meets the eye, and then he would immediately just be a giant dick again. It's like, no, he read a poem once. It doesn't mean he's interesting. He was just read a poem that one time. He's actually still an asshole.
So, my question is, like, what I've been wondering about this comic, and it comes a lot from Lancelot, is, like, did the comic, like, when did the writers, like, were they trying to be a little bit serious in some ways? Like, I don't know. It's hard to tell with these older comics, because especially with Dazzler in particular, she's, like, I don't know what her character is. I mean, I know what she's supposed to be, but, like, is this supposed to be a serious type of thing? Like the type of thing you would read in, like, maybe Spider-Man, like, whole great power comes great responsibility thing, or
so I don't know. I think a lot of the people around her are supposed to be, like, just her supporting cast starting off, and they've all got, like, things about them that make you kind of like them or make them stick out in your memory in a way that they kind of are associated with her when you think about her. Like, Lancelot, some of her band members, like, I still remember the fat guy. Mm-hmm. Which I was kind of offended by, because, oh, look at the drummer's fat, and all the fat guys think about is food. No, I'm sure he thinks about drumming a little bit if he's a professional drummer. But, like, they all kind of have, like, a shtick to them, you know? And I think they're characters that just kind of hang around her that eventually one day might get some kind of development or might cross over into the storyline somehow, somewhere. That was a thing that was really popular in the 80s. If we ever read the original 80s Booster Gold, there's a Kurt, like, his secretary, Trixie, is in that all the fucking time. And so far as I can tell, she does nothing for the comic. It's just, there was this thing in the 80s where it was important for every hero to have their own supporting cast that was independent of every other hero in their supporting cast. So it's like you kind of got to build up Lancelot and all these people and have them associate with who they are. So I think none of those people were meant to be taken seriously. But I actually, this comic has a lot of faults, but I think Alison Blair and Dazzler is actually kind of awesome. I really do like her, and I think her character is genius. We can just get into that. Because who wrote in here, Q, my dad wants to pay for law school. Never mind. Her dad's a dick.
That was me. I actually took notes as I was reading, and at first she seemed really whiny, but she did grow a personality, definitely.
Right, but okay. But you have a valid point, like, oh no, my dad wants to pay for law school, how shitty. Like, okay, just go to law school and then do music on the side, and then once you have a law degree, go do music, and then if that fails, then you have a fucking law degree. Like, I get where that comes from, and then yeah, sure, he's a dick. Like, oh, you're not going to do the law degree, well then fuck you. But, okay, here's the thing that makes me love Dazzler, and I'm just going to get right into it, because when I read that comment of yours, Jen, I was like, oh hell no. Oh hell no, and I wrote a big ass fucking paragraph in here. So, like, Dazzler is stuck between two worlds, and both sides are representative of different things, but they both want her to do the same thing. They both want her to commit to their side, right? So her dad's obviously cast as a villain, right? Her dad's not like a villain. He's a muhahaha, you know, mustache.
He's an antagonist, right?
Not even that. He's just a douchebag and an asshole, right? But what he wants her to do is commit to law school. Like, commit to law school, do nothing else. My way is the right way. I want you to go to a good school, get a good job that I know can support you because it supported me in the way I raised you, right? And he wants her to commit to that and give up this music thing and give up all this stuff and be serious, right? On the other side, especially in the first four issues, we get the superhero community. And they're going out to her concerts. They're being super accepting on the surface, you know, and all of that. And they're supporting her. And they're supporting her career, for more or less, right? Except when she calls Storm, and every time she interacts with them on anything other than that superficial level, they want her to do the same thing. They want her to also commit to their side. So while Storm's not being a bitch about it, she's like, oh, you want to come and hang out and do more X-Men stuff? Cool, just give up music. And it's like, that's the one thing that, I mean, aside from the comic and aside from her superpowers and the way her powers are tied to music, like, her and music is the fundamental building block of her character and who she is, you know? So I think this comic has a really cool subtext about how difficult it is to be independent. Like, she wants to be accepted, she wants to have friends, she wants to have support, she wants to have her family understand her. Like, she goes back and she really wants her grandmother to be a bigger part of her life, but she can't because the father's there and all of this stuff, you know? And it's really fucking hard. And that was a huge theme in the late 70s to mid 80s, right? This is getting lit crit level here. This is getting, what is it, new historicism? I don't know. But, like, there was this, like, think about TV shows, right? Like, fucking Mary Tyler Moore, right? Doesn't it end in, like, you're gonna make it here after all, or if I can make it here, I can make it anywhere? Like, all that kind of shit is, like, a huge thing in the late 70s and early 80s. And it's something that that generation took as a huge burden when they saw, like, the previous generation come back from World War II and dominate politics and business just the way Dazzler's dad does. Dazzler's dad probably came back from World War II and was like, I'm going to be a fucking lawyer off the GI Bill, and I'm going to dominate politics and be a good businessman and make a lot of money, and, you know, and I want that same thing for my daughter. Except we get the other side of that story off of Spider-Man in the comic when he says, like, he mentions the recession of the early 80s or something. He mentions people being poor, having it rough everywhere. Or, like, I wish I could tell these bad guys to just go get a job, but I know how hard it is these days. Or he says stuff, like, along that line, right? So there's this huge sense in the comic and in Dazzler, not just of how hard it is to be independent and maintain what you believe is your core piece of your personality when you're trying to get pulled into acceptance either way, but there's also this sense of, like, these people who are trying to tell you what to do are the same people who are fucking up the world and putting you in a giant recession.
So I think the difficulty with Dazzler is that in addition to the themes of, like, you know, female autonomy that we see with her, you also have the trope of the starving artist.
Yeah.
And that's where my personal sense of frustration comes in, because it's this idea that you have to be 100% dedicated to your craft to the point where you can't do anything else. All of your commitment is focused on it. And, you know, like, she keeps saying, oh, there's nothing in my fridge. But we see her, like, she calls up the X-Men, she kind of wanders around, she goes to the disco, and some of it is work. Some of it is, like, legitimate gigs and auditions and, like, basically trying to sell her act to managers. But you don't get the sense that she is working for her autonomy aside from doing music. And you still have to realize that, like, practicality is a huge factor in one's life. And I know this is a comic, so, like, it's not that dire, and it doesn't need to turn into, like, okay, here's all the minutia of what Dazzler does every day. But it felt very much like she's crying about how she has no money, can't pay her rent, can't afford food, and it's all in this glorious pursuit of a dream. But it's like, you know, hey, your dream only seems to take up your evenings. Can't you get some kind of job, even if it's not law school? Like, that's my frustration with her.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, it's, I am interested in the fact that she's trying to be an independent woman. And it's interesting, too, that her dad isn't saying, go find a man and settle down, which I think is what we often see in the, like, you know, autonomous woman finds way in the world trope. It's, he's saying, become a lawyer, become able to support yourself, be wealthy with this career. So that's a bit of a turnaround, too. It's just he's such a dick in how he does it.
Yeah.
And sometimes it doesn't even seem like it's a sense of security, like, for his daughter on his part. It's just, Like, his motives seem unclear or illogical. Like, they're based in some kind of angry emotion, but you don't really get to tell what the root of that is. And maybe that appears in the issues I didn't read. But, you know, he really just presents as this giant douchebag at first, but...
Yeah, there's not really, like, a good reason why law school out of everything she could possibly do. Other than that, it's what he does.
Yeah, so it's kind of weird because on the one hand, he's like, become independent. But he's saying, no, become independent in this very specific, confining way. But yeah, it's more the starving artist trope with her that I have an issue with. Because she doesn't seem that busy with her music career that she can't, like, feed herself. I don't know.
You know, you're totally right. There was times, like, more than once she mentioned, like, I'm 2 months behind on the rent. And I was like, how the fuck are you not evicted yet? Like, isn't this supposed to be set in New York City? Two months of rent in New York City has never been chump change.
Even in the 70s.
Never been chump change. Like, how the fuck are you not evicted after not paying rent for 2 months? Get a job at fucking Big Belly Burger, for Christ's sakes. Somebody will hire you to be a waitress, Dazzler. Yeah. Somebody will. I swear to God.
You know that disco suit costs lots of money with the sequins and all.
Oh, yeah.
Like, her wardrobe's not cheap.
No.
And she only has the one outfit.
That is true. Oh, it probably reeks.
Oh, God. Especially because she always talks about how she has to be in such good shape for her show.
Ew.
She mentions that all the time, and I just imagine, like, her show has got to be something to behold. Because she's always talking about, like, it's such a good thing I'm in great shape because I'm always prepared for my stage act. And I'm like, what?
Well, she's, like, you know, she's skating around and singing.
Yeah,
but... it takes a lot of...
But to the level where she's fighting the Hulk with her stage act skating. That's suspension of disbelief. I know, but it's like... You got a serious stage act, don't you? Maybe it's because I'd never seen live disco. Maybe then I would understand.
Yeah, you just don't know what it's like to be a disco star.
I don't know this scene. I really, really don't. I don't know. I saw that comment in there, and I was like, I had this like sense of like I like Dazzler, and I identified with her as a character for some reason, but I couldn't figure out what it was until it was. I realized that it was a sense of, like, the same people who are telling her what to do are the people who are fucking over her world and creating a recession that's making it difficult maybe for her to get a job and makes it difficult for her to pay rent and all of these kinds of things. And I think that's something that a lot of people in our generation could also feel is, like, our previous generation touts how pull yourself up by the bootstraps, we've built this great country for you and blah, 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 and all of that, except now our generation is sitting here with a giant recession and incredibly expensive homes and, like, bankrupt banks and major car companies and Enron and all of that shit, and those people are telling us, our generation, you know, just, you know, go out there and make it after all. And it's like, no, the world's fucked, thank you very much. And it's, like, the same position Dazzler's in, but it was because of your comment, Jen, that I was able to make that connection. But I also want to... I was equally frustrated by the get a damn job, hippie. I know all of the things that you're crying about, Dazzler, and I do emphasize with you, Ms. Blair, but you can just get a job somewhere, anywhere. You can. You're a pretty blonde woman. You can get a job.
I mean, she can waitress. Like, yes. Isn't that what every starving artist does in every TV show? So... I don't know. Or the X-Men could hire her for part-time mutant work.
They don't have jobs.
Well, they
being
want
her, X-Men is the
that's
job,
the thing, though,
right?
Is they want her to give up music. If she's going to go to Xavier's, she has to give up music.
That was
part of their deal.
Yeah. It's so nonsensical. I mean, maybe it's also the way it plays out that bothers me, because it's so unrealistic. You know, the X-Men, they aren't fascists. I feel
But they want her to commit, right? Like, they show you multiple times. In this comic, which is not an X-Men comic, they show you how often they're in the training room and how hard they're working. Like, there's the implied, like, if you want to be a part of this crew, you have to practice with us a lot. And there's not going to be time for your music career if you want to join us. And I think the same thing would kind of go with the Avengers and stuff. Sorry.
Well, no, I was going to say, I agree with what you're saying, Andy, because... I mean, the X-Men don't have jobs. Their life is being in the X-Men. You know what I mean? Like, even the junior members, like, at this part in continuity, Shadowcat was...
Sprite.
Well, she was Sprite, but she wasn't actually part of the team. Like, Professor Xavier wouldn't let her train because he felt that she was too young. And she went to And so, these characters who aren't, like, active field members of the X-Men are the ones that have a life outside of the X-Men.
And I think at this point, she would be an active member.
Yeah.
She's got enough control over her powers. She's old enough. There's no reason that she wouldn't be a part of the team in full.
Yeah, so you were talking about how it's, like... Well, Jen mentioned that, the whole get a job thing. If you're struggling so much, go get a job. But then you also mentioned that Peter Parker talked about how there's some kind of recession right now, and it's not so easy for people to get a job. So let's say that there is this recession in New York City or in America, and it's not so hard for her to get a job. I mean, it's not so easy for her to get a job. And it's just she can't get a job. What should she be doing? Don't you think she should be pursuing something that could potentially give her income at some point in the future? I feel like you guys are being a little bit unfair to Dazzler. Because, like, I don't disagree with what you're saying. It's like, yes, having a job would be great. And she could maybe – it might help her if she has a job because she can – she has the income to buy new roller skates or whatever. But at the same time, it's like it's been made clear to us that jobs aren't so easy to come by in New York City, whether they're disco related or not. And if she can't get a job, she should be doing something constructive. And I think by working on her act and going to auditions and doing that kind of stuff, she is being productive, even though she doesn't have any money. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean...
No, I think that's totally legit. And perhaps I am being too harsh. I just... Maybe I think it's that she, to me, seems portrayed a little two-dimensionally. So, if we talk about it, yeah, all these issues certainly come up, and it's hard for anybody, right? Like, we know this from real life. But the way her character comes across, to me at least, seems very, like, naive. Like, she just says, I want to sing and do nothing else.
Yeah, so, and that's just a
writing problem more than anything.
Yeah, there's,
there's also the whole part about, storytelling. We can't come at this from, like, a novel type of, that type of storytelling perspective. I mean, who's going to want to read a comic about, Dazzler interviewing to work at the McDonald's drive-thru or something, Nobody cares about that.
Yeah.
How are her powers going to, like, work? Like, somebody's going to try to rob the drive-thru and somebody's going to honk their horn and all of a sudden she's going to have lots of sound turn into light and she can kill the muggers or something?
Oh, that sounds amazing.
I think you just wrote the best comic ever.
See, I think this whole thing gets solved in, like, one panel. In one panel, you just have her have a thought bubble that says, man, I wish one of these restaurants would call me back about that application. Right, like, you one panel fixes this, because yeah. if you put in that panel, then it's like, okay, she is trying to get a day job, but she fucking can't, so she's doing this because she loves it, and it might go somewhere, who knows, but either way, this is her dream, and she's in New York to pursue this dream, right? It just takes that one panel. But without that panel, and David, I know you and I have had this discussion before, like, at a certain point, you got rent to pay, and it's fine that you have dreams, and it's fine that you have standards, but you get a job to pay rent and to feed yourself. It doesn't matter what it is. Like, I'm not too good for any job. If I lose my job and my wife loses her job and we got to make rent, I don't care. I will be a janitor. I will do construction. My education, my degrees, whatever, just goes right out the window. You need to pay for things. And so it's like, without that panel, Dazzler looks like she's too hoity-toity about her dream, or she's too good for that just basic work, like she's been raised on her father's whatever, like, level of comfort and doesn't want to work at any one of these jobs that she might find too menial, or those dreams aren't musical, they don't inspire my career as a musician and a dancer, like, that hoity-toity doesn't fly either. So it's like, without it, she kind of slips in that direction. And as the reader, you kind of have to just assume that she's not that way based on the internal monologue that you get from her. Except, God, it would help so much to get that one panel.
Yeah, Yeah, I see the point you're trying to make. But for most, I keep like getting hung up on this whole storytelling perspective thing. Like, it would not make for good storytelling if one of those restaurants did call her back, and then she was like, okay, I gotta go get a job, and now I have to work this double shift, so I can't make it to the disco to sing, and then she just ends up being a waitress forever.
Yeah,
and smoking and all these really sad things. She just becomes a super sad individual.
And if it keeps coming up over and over, and she still doesn't get a job as a waitress, then it becomes it becomes a running commentary about the recession, which you probably don't want to do because this is a comic and it's supposed to be escapist. And you're right, if she does get a job, then where does it go? And if you just mention it and it never comes up again, then it kind of just is left dangling there. You're right. So I mean, one panel I would feel like solves the problem in this trade, but as an ongoing story, it's like, well, I don't know.
Because you want the readers to root for her, not to find her to be like this super sad individual who can't get her shit together.
Bitch can't pay rent, can't put food in the fridge.
You know, maybe I feel like,
I mean, would
even
you want to read a comic about Dazzler going to collect food stamps?
Yes. 1,000 times.
I mean, that's public assistance is a great thing to have, but unless that's what the story is about, I don't think that's something that people want to read about in a comic about a superpowered disco singer.
You know, the more practical solution, I think, would just be to remove two of the panels where she talks. The second time she mentions how she can't pay rent, and the second time she talks about how she can't get food. Because if they did that, she comes across as, like, less desperate whiny. And this comic is already over full of text. And a lot of, I don't know, flim-flam kind of happens panel to panel. So if you trimmed that down, that would also be a really good solution for the writing here.
Yeah, that's a tough balance, though. Because if you take that stuff out, then you also take out the theme about how hard it is to be an independent person. And I really do think that is a core theme in this comic and for Dazzler's character. And because her father beats that same war drum, too. It's not just her. I think that's something that the author is trying to get across. And those things are the things that make her come off as whining, starving artist. But it's tough.
I think the development of her music career works well in terms of showing her independence, because she's following this dream of hers, and she goes to managers and she tries to book shows and she does auditions. So she's being proactive about making herself a career. I think that's a good display of independence. And I mean, it's the main focus here too. So if you kind of, even if you do take away from the other parts of that discussion about how hard it is to pay the bills or to feed yourself, you still have the portrayal of, you know, the struggle to make a career and make a life for yourself.
Hmm.
I don't know. Man, this comic is not a Gen comic.
No, I think it's okay. I mean, I think maybe we're expecting too much from this comic. Like, we want to see, I think we all agree that with Andy's point about there's this great message about being independent and like struggling with, you know, these people who love you supposedly but don't agree with your track in life. And so, you know, that definitely makes for interesting storytelling, but at the same time, it's like, how hyper realistic do you want this to be? You know, do you really want to see Dazzler put her dream of being a disco star on hold to any degree? Because I think if it was a matter of having a place to stay and food to eat, then she has a really easy solution, and that's just to go join the X-Men.
Yeah.
Because those guys don't have jobs. They just prance around in the danger room all day. And Chuck feeds them and stuff, you know? And all they got to do is sometimes fight Magneto. And, I mean, obviously, her powers, she's pretty powerful. I mean, she fights Doom. I mean, she doesn't win, but she holds her own against him.
I do.
She would certainly be a great member of the X-Men.
I do like that. That's a recurring thing in this comic, is that she's fighting. She's constantly punching above her weight class, but never winning, per se. Just like, she's fighting above her weight class, and then the fight is over. Or she just leaves. Or the villain leaves. Like,
she beats Nightmare. He's like, God damn it.
Well, that's just, that's a matchup problem. Of all the people for Nightmare to have to fight, Dazzler's, like, the one.
Well, she's got that whole, like, Squirrel Girl effect, right? That's a trademark term by David Montgomery. The Squirrel Girl effect. Where she's, like, this super dopey character, but when she, you know, like, you know, people, when we talk about Superman or something, we all say that his power set is, he's as powerful as he needs to be for the story. I think Dazzler is another example of that. You know, they don't put her in insane situations in the same way that Superman would be. Like, she's not going to fight Darkseid, right?
No.
But I mean...
I mean, Doom's fighting the Hulk?
Doom's no slouch, right?
Yeah.
So, she's as powerful as the story needs to be. Or, like, so she survives the battle with Doom, and then she seems to be doing okay against the Hulk. But then this Blue Shield HMO insurance company dude is like... She needs his help, and what is his powers that he has a blue shield?
Yeah, I didn't even get what the hell is going on with him.
He's a good provides you with good insurance. That's what his thing is. Do you think it's a commercial snuck into this comic? Well, I know somebody else mentioned the blue shield thing.
He needs good insurance for his mom.
Yeah. So I'm trying to say is that Dazzler is the same as Superman.
Well, yeah, and like it has that old school Superman feel where, like, whenever he got into a fight, Superman could just pull something out of his ass, and the art and the writers would just be like, yeah, sure, whatever, it's a little known Kryptonian power how that you can pull a weird cellophane S off of your chest and throw it at somebody.
It's a healing coma.
Exactly.
It's a Kryptonian healing coma.
Exactly. So, like, you're fighting the Hulk. Oh, God, I have to stall for four panels. She can bend her light into something that looks kind of like a tank, right? Yeah, sure.
Dude, she basically is Green Lantern in that panel.
Right? Basically. I mean, it's not a functional tank, but it's looks like a tank and fools Hulk for a half a second. That's, like, where the hell did that come from? That has nothing to do... Like, what song are you listening to? Is it a song about tanks?
She's singing that song playing, by... yeah, that song. I can't remember the song.
That one. That's what she's playing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not really a disco song, but it'll do, right?
Well, she doesn't listen to the disco music. There's a couple times where they talk about, like, what song she's playing, and one of them was Another Brick in the Wall.
Yeah,
that's
like,
when she was in Nightmare's Realm.
Yeah.
There were multiple Pink Floyd references, and I was like, you do realize that's not disco, right?
I hope that Tom DeFalco knows that's not a disco song.
Yeah, like...
I like that Dazzler, the disco singer, is like a classic rock fan.
she just likes good tunes, man.
Yeah, apparently.
She doesn't discriminate.
It would be great to read some of these and listen to the songs she's listening to. Like, that would have been a cool thing.
But see, the problem is we don't actually do they ever drop any like disco titles? Like,
no, I think we only got like the two or three.
Yeah, I forgot. For that first big gig that she does with her new manager, that Doom messes up, she says what her opening act is going to be, but I can't remember.
Oh, the one where she has a disco concert at the UN?
Yeah, yeah.
So fucking stupid.
It's amazing.
Disco concert at the UN. Well, I guess her manager is both super smart in that he alliterates and obviously has a nice big vocabulary, but he's kind of dumb because he's like, you're going to do this benefit gig at the UN because that's going to get you good press. It's like, no, nobody gives a shit about the UN. Even in the 80s, nobody gave a shit about the UN. And then his follow-up is, you're going to go play a college and you're going to sing country western. But I'm a disco singer. What?
I thought the cowboy hat was a really good addition to her costume.
Yes.
It was. That was pretty fucking sick. That was almost as good of an addition as
it was like the same silvery material.
Yeah, it was cool. Then she would look like disco western. Is disco western an actual genre? That'd be sick.
Could be.
I gotta look that up. Hold on. I'm gonna look this up after the show. Disco western. Oh yeah. Anyway, yeah.
You know, for the UN concert, I feel like they snuck that in just so they could make a critique of the UN. Do you remember that? Like, there was one of those text boxes that said something about it that was really... I don't know. It was like this random political social critique.
Yeah, there's...
Right in the middle.
Throughout this thing, there's a couple little jabs at the establishment. I really do think that that's an underlying thing in this comic, is like, fuck the man. creating this recession for us young people.
Oh, here it is. Meanwhile, across town in a building dedicated to international peace and cooperation, yet more often used for inflammatory propaganda and calculated deceit. Oh, harsh burn.
Oh, well, that's also, Cold War stuff probably too.
Yeah.
Right? I always forget that that was a thing. It's nice to live in a world where I can forget that the Cold War was a thing.
Well, we just have different things.
Yeah.
Like Ebola.
Oh, and God. ISIS. Oh, so fucking stupid.
Anyways, that's not a path we want to go down.
No. I don't need to rant on that. So who is your favorite supporting cast member? We had Lancelot, who was obviously my favorite. We had the band, including the fat drummer, who thinks about food all the time. The manager, who's my other favorite. We get the doctor that she's kind of dating-ish.
What's his name, Paul?
Paul, I think,
Dr.
yeah.
Dr. Paul?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, he offered to take her to breakfast. She was like, I'm too busy. Oh, shit, I have to pay this huge hospital bill. Maybe I should have had breakfast with the rich doctor.
And then his bitchy nurse. Not his bitchy nurse, his bitch of a nurse.
Yeah, she was like, damn disco kids and their loud music and afros.
Was she actually older? Or, I don't know, I think she was jealous more than anything else. Which is a weird thing, because she said things like, the doctor's too good for her and her kind. That's like a jealousy kind of thing, I think.
Maybe she's mutant racist?
But I don't,
maybe she's actually just a sentinel.
And David wins.
Yeah, I don't know what her deal was, but it was funny and annoying. I wanted her to get some kind of comeuppance at some point, but...
I'm sure it'll happen eventually. Oh, and then so, somebody else. I don't know.
I want to talk about Lancelot.
Yeah!
And how much... Okay, he is the greatest. First off, the shirt with the hearts. But did you notice he has, like, the most expressive hands of anyone in the comic? When we first see him, he does the, like pointing at her.
Yeah, he does.
Thing. He's like, hey, baby. Yeah, exactly. He does that thing.
How you doing?
But then later, if you look at him when he's backstage at the UN, he's always doing some weird gesticulation with his hands. So, like, one... Like, the first one, he's, like, yelling with his hand up to his face really weird, and then later he's talking like that, or maybe lighting a cigarette, I don't know. And then when he sees, like, Doom's lackeys beating up people, he puts his palm up to his mouth with, like, his fingertips on his lips, like one would do when they're like, whoa, you know, it's... He has the greatest hand gestures of anyone in this comic, and, like... I'll just say in comics, they're so noticeable and really expressive and really goofy.
Well, maybe awesome. He's, you know, there's that stereotype that, I mean, he looks kind of like Sylvester Stallone, so maybe, you know, he's, you know, that Italian stereotype where they talk with their hands.
No, yeah, there's Could that.
Be. He's Italian. He's Sylvester Stallone.
Basically. No, see, my theory is that he's gay.
Yeah, I'm going for that one too, honestly.
Is that he's gay, and it's the early 80s, and you saw what happened to Dazzler when they found out she was a mutant. So he's going to be pretending to ogle women all the time. But really, he's trying to get Bruce Banner in the back of the van. Like, that's just my theory.
Is that your headcanon?
Yeah, I don't know why. That's not my headcanon! Like... I don't care whether he's gay or not. I'm not rooting for him to be gay or anything. I'm just willing to bet that if this wasn't the 80s and they were writing it today, they could out and out say that this Lancelot character is gay. Like, I have a feeling that he was meant to be portrayed as a gay guy, or if the run goes on long enough, maybe we do find out that he is gay. I don't know. I'll have to look him up. That's my theory, my hypothesis, is that he's actually gay. I don't know why. Oh, I hear Googling.
Yeah, I'm Googling. We're
going to
find out.
Are you shipping, Andy? Is that what it is?
No, I'm not shipping.
He's writing slash fic right now.
I'm not doing slash fic of Lancelot and Bruce Banner. No.
God, anyway, Lancelot and Johnny Storm. Duh.
Well, speaking of Johnny Storm, I think he was my favorite supporting character in this comic. Especially when he... I don't know why. The part when he picks her up and takes her to the hospital and he cries. I don't know why I laughed at that. I was like sitting on the couch reading this, and I like was like, he's crying. Like, I don't know why I felt that. That was my reaction to Johnny Storm crying, was to snicker at him.
I think that's an appropriate reaction. But no, think of it. It's like so goofy for his character, right? He's all machismo and like, I'm Johnny Storm, I'm the best. So if he gets
he's like
weepy,
a total bro.
Yeah, when he gets weepy over a woman, it's kind of funny.
But yes, I thought Johnny was a kind of fun supporting character, because he was like, I think he was like trying to hit on her, but then like she was kind of like confused about him.
Yeah, I think in the way that he kind of tries to hit on every girl he sees.
Maybe I was trying to be a shipper with Johnny Storm and Dazzler.
No, I think if she hadn't have been like, what the fuck? If she hadn't been dazed a little bit, she would have caught on to what he was doing. And given him the thumbs up or the thumbs down when we were there. Because it's kind of like, I don't know, are they going to, what's going on here? And then, oh, hey, there's a doctor. Okay. Doctor wins.
So I want to say, much to my disappointment, Lancelot Steele was not important enough to have, like, any significant Google entries.
Okay, well then I guess that means I was right. That's the way things work in my world.
If nobody can prove you wrong, you're right.
That's right. Don't talk to me about logical fallacies. I don't need them. So what else do we want to talk about in this? The art?
Okay.
I liked the costume design here.
Oh, yeah? Which one?
The extras. Everyone who's an extra in this comic is excellent. Like
Lancelot Steele?
Lancelot Steele.
One of the thugs that Lancelot fights has the best afro.
Yeah, it's striped.
He's got the striped afro.
Oh, shit.
Well, no, his buddies are great, too. Like, the guy next to him just has all these stars painted across his face, like David Bowie style.
Oh, yeah, I saw that one.
What is that?
It's amazing is what it is.
Like, another guy, the guy next to him has what appears to be, like, a necklace draped over his nose, maybe?
We're just not hip to the style of the 70s.
This comic is so dated. And it's... I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just there's so much lingo, and everyone is dressed so insanely. And I know, like, you know, certain trends come and go, like big hair, you know, like, what are you wearing? How are you, like, tucking in your shirt or rolling up the cuffs of your jeans? That kind of shit is always going to date a comic. But, man, this is extreme. The face paint, the crazy shirts, the giant mustaches.
Well, I think like all the characters that Dazzler interacts with are representative of disco culture.
Yeah.
And disco is a thing that has not really come back in the same way that other fads have.
No, unfortunately.
I mean, and therein lies the reason why it's super dated.
Yeah. Yeah, even there's dated lingo that comes back in a weird sort of way. But disco lingo hasn't. Like, nobody talks about jive turkeys.
And no one calls each other mama.
No.
Right, that weirded me out.
They sure don't, mama.
Yeah, when she's like, this is one tough mama. I was like, okay. And then, like, I think Enchantress maybe said, or no, it was still Dazzler.
Oh, God,
she's
I forgot
like,
all about the fight
that,
with
mama.
Enchantress.
Yeah, like.
Well, what's funny, crazy. Too, is, like, there's a, when she's fighting Nightmare, she's like, she, like, lets out this, like, stream of slang, and he's like, I have no idea what you said, but I'm pretty sure I get the context, so now I'm going to kill you. It's just, I think they were just trying to show that Nightmare's, like, just an old man. He's not cool.
No, he's not jive.
No, he's not jive at all.
God, yeah, I forgot all about Enchantress being a part of this.
I love how Enchantress's, like, plan was to become a disco singer.
I don't know what the hell is going on with that with her. Like Doom? I really like Doom's appearance, because Doom was just like, I'm doing Doom stuff, because I'm Doom. And
yeah.
Dazzler happens to be here, so I'm going to use her, because she happens to be around, and I'll use her to help me with my Doom stuff. Oh, she's not useful anymore? Okay, that's fine, go ahead, and I'll just go about my Doom stuff. Like, he just kind of, it feels like Doom just kind of waltzes, like, and intersects through Dazzler's life and then goes right back out the same intersection.
He's just dooming around.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm going to make that a verb now, dooming around. But, like, Enchantress, it felt like the whole Enchantress thing was forced. I don't know. I think that's why Doom is such a great villain in this, and why he's probably great everywhere. He just feels so natural. You could plop him in anywhere.
Because he, like, ignores everything that, like, is irrelevant to him.
Yes.
He's like, oh, you're talking to me, you puny peasant, I kill you.
I kill you.
Like, you're sitting there talking, I'm just dooming around. So I'm going to ignore you. Doom. Doom.
The thing about Enchantress that was really weird is she wanted this dark portal to take over the universe, and that seems like really a priority, like it should be very important, yet she's distracted because she was beat in a singing contest.
That's a special kind of vanity right there.
Yeah, and I know we're supposed to think that, you know, Enchantress is like crazy vain, but I think taking over the universe would overcome anybody's vanity. Because then you would rule the universe, so...
Hey, that's some straight-up Trojan War shit right there. Because somebody was like, you know who's better than you, Enchantress? Dazzler. And so everyone went to war. Because Helen of Troy was more beautiful than Aphrodite?
No, yeah, was it Aphrodite?
Athena, maybe? I don't know.
No, it was Aphrodite, because there's a word, the something of Paris, with the apple.
Oh.
He has to give the apple to the prettiest lady. God, and Paris. Aphrodite's like, fuck you!
God, Paris was such a fucking tool.
It's not his choice. It's the...
No, I don't care. He's a tool. Meh. He was a tool then, and he was a tool his whole fucking...
No, life. I don't think Jen is saying that it was his choice, that he was a tool.
No, maybe. I know. He was a tool before that choice was removed from... Anyway, sorry. We don't need to talk about Trojan War.
But I'm just trying to...
sidetrack too well.
You know, I'm just saying that, you know... That's basically what this story is about.
Yeah.
It's the Trojan War.
Yeah.
In disco.
Yeah.
That would have been... Someone should make that, like, just off-Broadway stage production.
I'll get on that tomorow during my lunch break.
Do it.
Then there will be an Odyssey sequel.
Yes, and then after that, the Aeneid, if it does well.
But it's like the same story, but slightly different.
No, the Aeneid is after Disco dies.
Well, the Aeneid is the reboot. It's the reboot.
Oh, Aeneid would have to be hair bands in the 80s.
Yes. Oh, yes! Hair metal!
No, so, like, that sounds like a great idea, but what I was thinking while we were talking about how, like, Enchantress, it's, like, basically a singing contest between superpowered individuals, there needs to be, like, a breakdancing one. I mean, you could get Vibe in there, and it could be, like, a breakdance fighting. I feel like that should be a thing.
Yes.
I like this. Guys, how do we not write comics together? One of us needs to learn how to draw.
Yeah, we need an artist. Really fast.
I don't know that.
I'll go find one, and then we'll come back.
We could win Tumblr.
Oh, yeah, we could. We would make Tumblr a bitch and sell, like, no comics because they'll pirate it all with stupid master posts.
That's cool. It's art. We'll just be starving artists.
I can't pay my rent, but somehow I'm not evicted. So, I don't know. I honestly have nothing left to talk about with this comic.
I got one more.
Okay.
Doom's first encounter with Dazzler, right after he shoots her, it says, Doom! Really big letters in the upper corner, but his face on that page is so good. There's nothing better. He's just like, I don't even know how to... His eyes are bugged out. It looks like he has, like, drool lines in his mouth, although that's not what that is.
Drool lines?
Yeah, like, his mouth is agape.
Maybe he's just really excited, and so he's like, bleh.
Yeah, he is like, bleh, but it looks like he's got, like, drool mouth, and his eyes are bugging out. And he's like, he has magic coming out of his hands, and Dazzler's just, like, prone on the ground, like, freaking out with her roller skates. This is, like, the greatest one-page spread that's ever been drawn.
Okay, well, then I know what your favorite scene was.
Yes.
Oh, man, that's gonna be hard.
Like, if I ever find the art for this page, I'm buying it no matter how much it costs.
Let me find it.
Okay, I do have a budget because I want to pay rent.
Okay, so I found the panel. He's like, so not good. Even looking at her. What is he looking at?
His doomness.
He's dooming around.
That's right.
Oh, man. It's so good.
It is an excellent panel.
I have to make a note of dooming around that I'm going to use that in everyday
I feel like that should be a GIF.
All right. I'll get on that, too.
Yeah.
It's okay. We just finished a big project at work. I don't need to do anything tomorrow.
It's Doom fine. Time.
I'll pretend to be productive. All right. Well, you know, I don't think I have a favorite scene in this myself, either.
I don't know, there's just a... I mean,
no.
This comic is... I like the panel of in issue 3. It's right before the Doom panel. It's like a couple pages before where Lancelot's like, I'm gonna go take care of that shit. And he's like rolling up his sleeves and stuff. He looks like he's about to take care of business. I don't know, there's just so much about this comic that's amazing and bad.
Oh, you know what?
But mostly okay. Amazing.
I will say, I had a visceral emotional reaction to a scene in this comic with that douchebag in the subway who was like, no, we should stay out of this fight. We should stay out of this because then they'll just come hurt us next. And then he finds out that Dazzler's a mutant and he's like, and the people get out of the train. He's like, she's a mutant, killer fighter. It's like, you fucking little asswipe. Like, I had a visceral reaction to that guy. Fuck that guy. That was good writing, because fuck that guy. That was my favorite scene, because I think on every level that scene worked for me.
You know, on the cover of issue number 3, Dr. Doom has, a gun holster. Why does he have a gun? What's with Doom's gun? I mean, maybe it's got to be some kind of magic science, super science gun.
Maybe there's not a gun.
Doom rays.
It's Doom and around gun?
Yeah.
It's a banana pouch. He keeps bananas in there for when he's hungry.
That's legit. It keeps him from going hungry.
Okay, I think it's time to rate this one.
Yeah.
All right. David, how about you go first?
See, okay, this is really hard because we just, spent the last however long making fun of this comic pretty much. But I really, thought it was pretty good. Like, I was talking to my cousin the other day about... We were actually talking about the podcast. And I was telling him how we were reading Dazzler. And he was like, oh, I don't know anything about Dazzler. And I was talking to him about, this what this comic's about and what happened. And then how awesome Dazzler could be. Because, I mean, think about what her powers are. She basically shoots lasers. That's what Cyclops does. Cyclops shoots lasers. There's lots of people who shoot laser beams.
Mm-hmm.
Hers are just disco-based laser beams. I mean, she intensified...
Amplified by disco balls.
Yeah, and so she's actually a pretty strong mutant, right? So, I'm kind of torn because it's not a great comic, but I really enjoyed it, genuinely. So, I'm going to have to give it a pretty decent rating. So I'm gonna give it a 3. If somebody was like, should I read this Dazzler comic? I would be like, hell yes, you should, baby.
Baby. Yeah, you should, mama.
Oh yeah, mama. That was the word.
Mama.
Okay. But yes, I'm a 3. It's a strong 3. I really thought this was a fun comic to read. Was it good? Nah. That doesn't always matter. It was fun.
All right, Jen.
I gotta give it a 2. The writing was so... There was so much verbiage in here. It's very rare that that there are so many words that I just want to stop reading them.
Yeah.
But the text boxes copied what was happening in the action. A lot of the time, people narrated exactly what they were doing. And a lot of the main character development points kept popping up over and over, which is a given in a serialized work because you want to engage readers in that character growth and, get them familiar if they're just jumping into the series. But it felt too samey for me.
Hmm.
So my major problem with this was that the writing not only didn't engage me, it pushed me away from being involved with the comic and fully enjoying it. Aside from that, I actually... really like how dated this comic was. I think this is a perfect time capsule to late 70s, early 80s comic art and writing. It has all of the lingo. It has all of the crazy art. The characters are so over the top. And earlier we discussed a little how silly is this supposed to be? I read it without any irony. I feel like it's serious, and I feel like that makes it better. And I might be totally wrong. Maybe it was meant to elicit some laughs, but I had fun reading it as a completely serious comic. So there's that. I don't know. If I had been more engaged, I would have given it like a much higher rating because I did like it. But as it stands, I'll give it a 2.
Okay. So I'm going to agree with everything both of you just said. This was really fun. This was super dated. It wasn't necessarily good because of what we were talking about, like with the repeated text. And even I admit to have stopped reading the text boxes. But I'm going to break the bank, and I'm going to give this a 4.
Nice. Nice.
I really do think that there's something in the Dazzler character, and there's something in this telling of the story that really connects with the time in which this comic was written more than any other time, any other comic I think we've read. Like, yes, it's dated in a lot of ways, but I think it's just, I think if you want to know what it feels like to have a dream and to have it get pushed down on both ends and have it be not just like, oh no, I'm a starving artist and my friends don't understand me, but have it be something that's like cultural affliction in the early 90s in the recession that is just going to give way to what we know happens in the late 80s, the like insane money craze and American Psycho stuff, right? Like, this comic taps into all of that shit in the early 80s in a way that nothing I've ever seen before. And I don't know how much of that was intentional. I honestly don't. But I feel like I could write a fucking paper on this. I feel like I really could delve into Dazzler and the little bits of shit all over in here, the little pokes at the establishment and the UN and all of this anti-the-man stuff. I just feel like there's so much here that if it wasn't so crappily written in, like, in the way that comics back then had to be crappily written, like, the reason what they're doing is narrated 3 times is because the printing process and the coloring really sucked. So there wasn't any guarantee that if I just drew her skating this way, you would actually see that's what it was. So I had to explain it and have to explain how. Like, you had to over-explain it because the printing sucked. And I don't know. Either way, I feel like there's something in this that I really like and that I really connect with and that I really think is fucking awesome. So I'm going to give it a 4, even though I can't I can't say this is actually a good comic, but I'm giving it a 4. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing anymore.
I mean, sometimes it's okay to have, like, an emotional reaction.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something in this that just makes me love it so much. Which, for me, makes this a really good ending to our Comics About Music series, which was just weird.
I think this one probably had the most,
music
in it.
Let's face it, we kind of... It's kind of just Dazzler, and the other 3 were just reaches.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they were music-ish.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the other one had Kiss in the Name, you know?
I know. Well, yeah.
No, they played music to defeat evil, so...
That's true. That was pretty damn musical. Anyway, we are done with music, and pretty soon Dark Horse is going to be done with Star Wars. Next year, all of the Star Wars property is going to be moving to Marvel, and Marvel is going to be printing Star Wars comics, which, you know, a lot of people say is a damn shame, because Star Wars has been a Dark Horse license for a long, long time, and they have done a lot of awesome comics. So we are going to do a series calling it A Farewell to Dark Horse Star Wars Comics, and we're actually going to do 2 that were just in the last couple of years. The first one we're going to read, which is next week, is going to be The Star Wars by J.W. Rinsler. And this thing is fucking crazy. This comic is based on George Lucas's original draft of Star Wars. So it's kind of the original movies, but way not.
Oh, it's delightfully insane. I really enjoyed that comic.
So that run was just 8 issues. We're going to read 0 to 8. It's all collected in the Star Wars Lucas draft trade. You can find that. The other one is actually an ongoing by Brian Wood. It's called Star Wars in the Shadow of Yavin. And this one takes place between episodes 4 and 5, I believe.
I've not read this one, so I don't know.
I think between 4 and 5. Anyway, it's Star Wars in the Shadow of Yavin. It's just, the comic is just called Star Wars. And we're going to read the first 6 issues that are collected in that trade. So it's 1 to 6, and those are from 2012. And we're going to finish this up by reading some of the Star Wars omnibus for Boba Fett. I originally put in the notes, a good Star Wars omnibus. I don't know which one. And I think it was David put in, the answer is always Boba Fett.
Well, yeah, I mean, I it's right there on my shelf. I could see it. It's a beautiful, yeah. It's a beautiful text.
Yeah, and you know what? I got to say, these omnibuses that Dark Horse makes are awesome.
Oh, yeah. It's like they're they're good. And this Boba Fett one is pretty good. I mean, you know how I feel about Boba Fett, Andy, but
yeah,
it's entertaining for sure.
I have a very good sense about how you feel about Boba Fett, considering you were Boba Fett at my wedding.
Yes.
So I don't know how much of it we're going to read. We'll figure that out later. Anyway, that's by a bunch of people: Thomas Andrews, Mike Kennedy, Ron Mars, John Ostrander.
There's one like longish story in there. I forget what it's called, but we'll let you listeners know at the end of next episode which part of the omnibus we're going to read.
For sure.
It's not like a Marvel omnibus where it's like newsprint black and white.
No, these omnibuses are awesome. They're color, they're good size, they're cheap, they're well printed. I love Dark Horse's omnibuses. They're awesome.
Yeah,
so that's what we've got coming up next. And if you want to know what we have coming up after that, you go to www.apsupercast.com. We've got our schedule up to episode 200. We have nothing scheduled after that because, guys, I don't know what's going to happen. Everything is going to change after episode 200. Everything. So I can't make any promises.
What's going to change?
Everything. Everything's going to change.
Wow.
Some of us might die. There's going to be a crisis of some kind. It's going to be a major crossover event.
Polybagged, and it'll be a bloody symbol.
There'll be a hologram.
Trading card. There'll be a trading card, too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, of course. So anyway, that's what we have coming up next. www.apsupercast.com, button on the right, future shows, all under that. If you have a suggestion for what we should do after episode 200, in case we're all still alive, go ahead and send us a recommendation at...
I can't talk. AtomicPoweredSupercast@gmail.com.
And as always, there's the social medias, facebook.com/APSupercast, twitter.com/APSupercast, and APSupercast.tumblr.com. And as always, please subscribe to us on...
iTunes.
Yeah. Dazzler. Okay, everybody. Until next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Have a good night, Mama.